Happy Monday, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, for downloading or streaming the Be Our Guest podcast. So glad you're here because we have a great show for you today. We're going to be joined by Mr. Jim Hill from the 12-hour live show last summer, where we raised over $30,000 for the Village, Give Kids the World, down in Central Florida. You know, Jim is a storyteller and he has all the information. We talk about Halloween in the Magic Kingdom, of course, Galaxy's Edge, and even the Give Kids the World Village itself. You're going to love today's show. But don't forget about our sponsors, and that includes our friends over at TheRunningBuddy.com. Planning a trip to the happiest place on Earth? Share your love for your favorite mouse with The Running Buddy's new Disney Luxe Travel Collection. They offer a variety of products like Mickey and Minnie Mouse backpacks, purses, magnetic hands-free buddy pouches, which if you run, I'm telling you, you need this thing, and much more. You even get a free Disney pin with each purchase. Also, a special gift for the Be Our Guest podcast listeners. Just use the code BeOurGuest at checkout for 10% off. Check them out today over at TheRunningBuddy.com. Stay out of lines and see the most amount of attractions possible on your next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Universal vacation with our friends over at TouringPlans.com, the official website for the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World. They have the trip planning tools to show you the least crowded park to visit every day, customized touring plans for visiting Disney's best rides, honest restaurant reviews, how to save on Disney tickets, the best hotel rooms to ask for with pictures, and so much more. For the cost of a couple of Dole Whips in Adventureland, you're getting 365 days of great information. Check them out today. They're over at touringplans.com. All right, time to get to today's show again. From the 12-hour live show, Mr. Jim Hill sharing his stories. It's always a good one. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Ready to take a trip to the world? You found the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. This is where your memories come front and center on our podcast stage.
Hey, guys. Nope.
Hey, Jim. How you doing today?
Jim.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm fine, and thank you, as always, for including me as part of this.
Yes, thank you so much for coming and joining us. We really appreciate it. We're actually in the middle of a challenge.
Oh, dear.
We have a great
Doesn't involve
listener.
Heavy lifting, does it? You know, because I've got the wrong outfit on. Hang on.
If you can come up with some witty story that can inspire a donation here in the next 5 minutes. No, we're just teasing. No, we have a great listener who pledged $2,500 as long as we raise $2,500 in the last hour. And we're really close. So I think we're going to end up making it here. We only need 30 more dollars. So
So this. I just have to come up with a $30 story.
$30 story. That's right. Have you got a couple laying around?
Hang on.
Doesn't have to be Galaxy's Edge. We could do Muppets or something for $30. Come on.
Okay. Well, speaking of the Muppets, have you heard about the show they're doing over at the O2? They're doing sort of a Muppets live thing over there right now that actually is kind of it's the precursor for a stateside thing they're going to be doing very, very soon.
I have
really?
Not heard.
That is
They're right now they're performing at the O2. In fact, let's see, today is actually the last day, July 14th. But, you know, it's that giant venue that Monty Python performed in, I want to say, 2 and 3 years ago when they reunited the cast. But this concept, the Muppets touring, is coming to the States. And not only that, I don't know if you've heard about the Disney digital subscription service that's been introduced in 2019. They're doing a Muppet series for that. And the gimmick is this U.S. tour and the O2 stuff. They are shooting footage as they do that, you know, at the London thing, as they do the thing around the country. And this will be featured as part of the television show.
More Muppets, wow, the better in my book. I love the Muppets. You know, even I was just down there last week and we went, of course, it was 100 degrees, you know, and I was just looking for air conditioning for as long of a period as possible. So we went into, you know, Muppet Vision 3D, and that is still a fun show. And it's not just the movie. It's the Stadler and Waldorf. And I like them. The Muppets are, I think the Muppets are just underappreciated as a whole.
Well, I, you know, you're right now in the middle of kind of a revival at Disney. I mean, don't get me wrong. The series that debuted on ABC, I want to say 2016, that sort of crashed and burned. It's interesting. There's a belief at Disney that the mistake that was made with that show is that they put it on ABC. That if it had gone, if it had been shown on Netflix, if they had had a season or two. And the thing with Netflix is, you know, you don't need the network size audience. You just need a Netflix size audience. Right. And, you know, and people forget about the original Muppet Show back in 75, 76, that it wasn't on the networks. It was syndicated. And that first year of shows, you know, they're really kind of weird. They're kind of trying to find their way. I mean, Gonzo has a different look and a different voice, and Piggy isn't even really a character at that point. But over the course of the shows, as they get into the second season, they really get their feet. They figure out what the show is. And by season 3, 4, 5, I mean, they are firing on all cylinders. So, you know, the belief at Disney is like, we screwed up by putting on an ABC. And in fact, that was the argument that Disney Studio or Muppet Studios was making. It's like, we'd like to be part of the future rather than the past. Can we go to Netflix? And so now the irony is, of course, that here they are on Disney's digital subscription service. You know, they're going to be part of the debut of that, along with that Monsters, Inc. animated series. You know, there's supposedly a lot of really interesting stuff that'll be popping up over there. In fact, I keep hearing from folks at the studio that when we finally see Tron 3, it's not going to be in theaters. It's going to be on the subscription service.
Wow. I think I guess the whole media market is changing. You know, I guess the way we consume our content, Disney's looking forward, and, you know, maybe in that, I guess. I mean, I'm not even a Netflix subscriber. I borrow my daughter in college. I borrow her password, but, you know, so
hey, I guess you and me both. Okay. You know, I'm one of these people who, you know, again, I remember when there were three channels. In fact, it was so exciting. Oh my God, we got UHF. We have two more channels. Oh my, you know, and, you know, it's kind of like when I have the conversation with my daughter about The Wizard of Oz, and it was like, you have to understand, it was only on once a year.
Yes.
And it was just like, what? You know, it's like, you know, that's it. So do you rode your dinosaur into the room the television was on? You know, that's like, so yeah, it's a very different landscape. In fact, to be honest, this is kind of what, you know, this is what this whole $71 billion acquisition of Fox is about. You know, it's all about getting that film library so that, you know, Disney has that much more content to offer to subscribers to push out through, you know, your phones and your tablets in addition to movie theaters. I mean, you know, Iger's one of these guys who really wants, I mean, in Iger's ideal world, when it comes time for, say, Star Wars 10, you know, it's like, look, you know, you want to go to the theater, you want to see it in IMAX in 3D, absolutely, you can do it, you know, but if on the other hand, you want to sit at home and watch, you know, Star Wars 10 on the flat screen you have in your living room or on your iPhone, Iger would love to do that on the exact same day.
That's crazy. That's so, I see why people are doing that, because, you know, you just want to get as many eyes on it as possible. But that is such a change in how things happen. You know, day one, watching it at home. That's crazy.
Yeah.
About going to the theater, too. So, I mean, but I guess, you know, not a lot of people like to go to the theater either. So I guess sitting at home on your couch would be nice to get, you know,
you can get up and go
to the bathroom. You could press pause. So.
No, that's exactly. In fact, you know, you've kind of nailed it, that, you know, there's this kind of you know, this generation that just doesn't like going to the movies anymore, you know, and like I said, you know, the, those of us who, you know, elderly folks with tiny bladders, it's like, yeah, well, hang on, let me hit the button, or be able on day one to put up the closed captioning. Have you reached that point in your life now where you put closed captioning up on, you know, on your television for everything?
Wait, what did you say? Wait, could you repeat yourself? I couldn't hear you.
There we go. That's right. You know, I the other day I'm sitting there and it's like, I am watching the British Baking Show with subtitles. It's like, what is wrong with me? You know, it's like,
there's not even a lot of words going across.
Well, no, that's it exactly. It's flan. All right. You know, how can I not understand that it's flan? You know, and so all right.
You're turning into Len Test is what's happening.
Right? It's, well, yes, it's, you know, Len and I will probably be both going to the old crabby, you know, guy's home very soon. So, you know, just, you know. You know, he'll take the 6 to 12 shift of yelling at kids to get off the lawn, and I'll pick up the late shift. So,
okay, so Jim, I have a question for you because we're having a debate all day. We've been having this for weeks, and if anybody knows, you may know, you may not. But the Skyliner. Okay, so the Skyliner. Is the Skyliner going to be air conditioned? Are those things going to be open air? What do you think? Is it open air or air conditioned?
Okay, if you've seen the artwork, all right, you've seen the fact that they have on the backmost portion of these things character art. So you have like Mickey and Minnie or the Hitchhiking Ghosts or that sort of thing. So it's partially enclosed. You know, the problem here is that, you know, we're not going back to the old sky buckets. You know, Disney legal just was not going to sign off on that. You know, the whole notion of, you know, there were, I don't know if you remember the stories about the people who would deliberately climb out of the sky buckets or throw themselves out with the hope that they could then sue Disney, you know, but they'd always managed to accidentally fall out when, you know, they were, you know, like only 10 or 15 feet above a building or, you know, that sort of thing. No, these are enclosed, but, you know, they're kind of a meshy, you know, a metallic thing that will allow you to look out, but, you know, so you can look out through the art, look out through the characters, that sort of thing, but they don't, you know, they don't want you to be able to climb out as you're traveling from Pop Century over to the Riviera. So, and more to the point, I guess Disney did look at, you know, how these things, you know, what it would cost to air condition these things. And the real concern was the additional weight, which, you know, as a fat guy, you know, it's just, you know, just, I guess that's the other issue, is just sort of like, there's a certain weight point for all of these things that, you know, and it was just sort of like, you know, if you multiply having an onboard air conditioner by the, you know, 40, 50, 60 of these that will be on the line at any one time going in both directions, that's a considerable additional weight. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing the character art and it, that you are. Disney's kind of trying to hide the fact that this is a little bit bare bones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the other hand, again, you're going to get some interesting views. I've got a friend who's working on the Ratatouille project, and it's like, you know, they're a little frustrated because they've realized that the back of the building is going to be viewable from the Skyliner as it comes into the international gateway. So they've actually had to pull budget from inside the attraction to at least get a basic treatment for the back of the building.
Oh. So they didn't think about that. Awesome.
Well, no, I mean, that, you know, I forget who I was just talking with about this, that there's always been this battle between the Imagineers and the parks. And the Imagineers' attitude is like, look, you hired us to build a wonderful attraction. It's your job to operate it. And in the end, you know, as far as Imagineering is concerned, it's like, we do what's inside the building. Right. It's your job to maintain the building. In fact, I just recently, Len and I were forwarded I'm gonna figure out how to tell this story without getting somebody in trouble. Basically, it's a theater attraction at Walt Disney World. It's opened within the last 10 years or so. We won't get into the specifics of which attraction it is, because I don't want somebody to not be able to sell things to Disney if another opportunity comes up. But basically, this is a company that does sports stadium seats, you know, so they're very familiar with doing like tens of thousands of seats. And, you know, this was a theater that was only going to have 500 or 600 seats. But again, it was going to be a show that churned every 15, 20 minutes or so. And, you know, so that they're making their presentation to Disney, and they're talking about how, well, you know, the nice thing about if you want to go with this fabric on the seats and that sort of thing, it's easy to maintain, it's easy to clean. And the Imagineers basically said to the guy who was making this pitch, look, we don't care about if it's easy to clean. We just care about if it looks good for the brochure. All right. We want the picture to look nice. You know, when we hand it up for publicity, and, you know, whether or not it's easy to maintain, that's the ops people's problem. We don't really give a burp, you know. So, yeah, there's not, you know, and this, you know, I bring this up because, you know, I'm sure you've got friends who have already managed to get on into Toy Story Land, you know, down at Disney Hollywood Studios.
And yeah, all three of us have been there actually already. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about the queue for Slinky Dog Dash.
I just passed out thinking about the heat that I experienced last week. It's so hot. It's hot.
But look, this is the thing. In 2021, the Disney World Resort will be celebrating its 50th anniversary. So they have been building attractions down there for 4+ decades. Why is it that, and understanding that this was going to be out in the open, and more to the point, this is a part of the park where people will be bringing very little children, all right, itty bitty kids, standing in long lines in the hot Florida sun. It's like to the fact that there is so little shade. I mean, yeah, you put up some fans, but there's so little shade in that queue. That's unconscionable. I mean, that borders on cruelty. But from Imagineering's point of view, it's like, look, that's not our problem. That's Ops's problem. And 2 and 3 years down the line, when they do the rehab of this attraction, they can put in the shade structures. You know, that's not our problem. I'm sorry.
2 to 3 years.
Yeah. So easily, you know, I mean, you know, and then that's the thing. You look at, and if you go back over the history of the parks, I mean, you know, for example, the very first version of the Mad Teacups that was built at the Magic Kingdom, you can go back and actually look at pictures of the park in 71, 72, 73. This thing is open to the sun. There is no, you know, there's no roof. So, you know, picture it's, you know, you're in the Mad Teacups, you're spinning around in one of those wonderful come out of nowhere, you know, Florida, you know, thunder and lightning storms comes up where, you know, the rain comes down like buckets. You know, boy, what fun that would be to be spinning and then get hit in the face with that. You know, I mean, they knew from, you know, 65, 66, when they were doing the initial land surveys, you know, after they bought all the turf, then it's like, wow, we get this much rain and these are the heat extremes and this is how hot it gets at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, you know, we really should do something about that. But it's been this historic problem, you know. And again, don't get me wrong, the Imagineers do wonderful attractions, you know, and I'm not faulting them on that. It's just this sort of attitude of, we take care of the inside of the building. Let ops worry about the outside, or more to the point, maintaining it after we hand it off.
That's amazing, though, that the company as a whole wouldn't make those two entities work more hand in hand for the guest benefit. You know, I was speaking with one of our listeners. He's walking down Sunset, Clyde, and got to meet his awesome family. But we were speaking about Toy Story Land because we both experienced it that day. And it was a very hot day last week or a couple weeks ago. And first of all, he said, whoever developed that queue was a sadist, because he said it was ridiculous. He was so hot. But the thing is, he said, it's a simple solution to me. He said, Andy needs to fly a couple of like jumbo kites, and you could kind of make it fit in with some, you know, that mesh material, but have a couple of kites up there, and that might help.
That is an excellent idea. The, you know, the irony is that At least for the next 3 to 5 years, this is it. This is what they're going to do. There's actually an expansion pad within the land for a third ride. But, you know, the hard reality is, as popular as Toy Story Land is straight out of the box, it needed the largest stroller parking area that Disney has ever done at one of its theme parks. They were just anticipating that this was going to appeal to so many small children that they were going to need, you know, the equivalent of a stroller parking area you could see from space. did you guys encounter that at all, or, you know?
I don't remember seeing the strollers when I was in there.
I don't either, and parked? I don't have a kid to put a stroller that I would have carried around either. In a stroller anyway, so.
Okay, well, maybe there's a listener out there who found the stroller parking, you know, but yeah, where the stroller parking is supposedly is where ride number 3 at some point in the future will be built. So, or excuse me, ride number 4, because if we're counting Midway right. Mania with its brand new entrance and all that, so.
That's true.
Anyway, yeah. Wow, very downbeat. People won't contribute money if they're downbeat. We have to find happier stories. All right, new topic.
Good stuff. No, I think the thing is, when you get in there at night, that land shines. It's because you're not dealing with the sun. And you know what? Come September, it's going to be, you know, I think it's because it opened in July. You know, I mean, it's a rough time in Florida, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in July. That's the extreme of the year. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the land. Slinky Dog, what did you think of Slinky Dog Coaster as an attraction? I thought it exceeded my expectations from everything that I heard. And then when I got to ride it, it was awesome. I liked it.
Well, you know, what's so funny is that, you know, if you talk with people about the ride, their favorite moment is when it slides backwards for the pre-launch.
Yes.
God, yeah, yes. I mean, you know, I that just cracks me up. You know, if you think about the poor engineers who designed all of the ride elements and the track layout, it's like, but, you know, what did you like best? Oh, when it slide backwards. It's like, wow, cool, great. I put all this thought into it. Speaking of the nighttime lighting package and that sort of thing, I don't know if you saw the announcement earlier this week, but for its, you know, starting on November 8th, that's when Disney's kicking off its, you know, property-wide holiday celebration. But on the 8th, a brand new holiday-specific lighting package will be kicking off for Toy Story Land. In fact, my understanding is Alien Swirling Saucer will feature a new soundtrack, and there'll be, you know, the backyard will be filled with ornaments that Andy has clearly taken out of the house when Mom wasn't looking.
Oh, that'll be cute.
So,
okay.
I
like that a lot. Yeah. Well, I feel like Disney's Hollywood Studios last year, they really upped their, I mean, they definitely upped the game as far as the holidays are concerned. You know, I actually thought it was better than the Magic Kingdom for the holidays. Mm. They went full out in the park, which is something that the Magic Kingdom doesn't do anymore. You know, they really just stick to Main Street most of the time. And so I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, and I know probably part of the reason Disney's Hollywood Studios brought out so much in the terms of holiday stuff is because there wasn't a whole lot to do in the park. So they're like, ta-da, look at all the shiny stuff we've got for the holidays. But for me, it really worked because I enjoyed the holiday experience there so much more. And it's actually where I ended up spending my Christmas Day night. Like, I went to Hollywood Studios, you know, to enjoy the atmosphere. So I'm really excited to see what they do with Toy Story Land, because I feel like, you know, they get it at Hollywood Studios. And now it's like, let's decorate the park, you know, let's celebrate the holiday here. So I'm excited.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because, of course, this time next year, the Anaheim version of Galaxy's Edge will be open. We're, you know, Len and I have been hearing that the Orlando version could be open as late as December. And I think that's the problem there.
That's kind of what I was thinking, to be perfectly honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that there won't be a need to put, you know, holiday related stuff in Star Wars Land initially, though. What's kind of funny is that if you know your Star Wars history, there was the holiday special from, what was it, 77? You know, where
yes.
Chewbacca celebrates Life Day.
Yes.
And I guess, you know, again, given the fact that the park has done, it does so well with its holiday lighting stuff. In fact, I guess there have been discussions, given that, you know, a lot of the stuff that's been added to the park most recently, obviously, is filling in for the Osborne lights that, you know, had to be discontinued, obviously, because, you know, you needed the turf for the, for Galaxy's Edge and for, for Toy Story Land. But they're looking, once Galaxy's Edge gets open, about how can we further expand our holiday offerings. And, you know, what's kind of interesting, circling back to the Disney subscription service, Disney's about to do another holiday movie. Have you heard about Noelle?
I have not.
Is that the one with Anna Kendrick?
Yep. She's playing Santa's daughter. And evidently the idea is that, you know, that Santa's getting ready to retire and, you know, somebody has to take over the family business and it's going to be the daughter. And so, there are discussions now about whether or not, you know, could we do this character as a walk around? Could we bring this character into the park? I mean, it's kind of intriguing, you know, Disney every so often will kick the tires on a popular film. For example, when they brought the Sanderson sisters into the park for Hocus Pocus, the spectacular in front of the castle, that was really kind of controversial because again, there's a little adult language in that film.
Yes, a little bit. And in the song, yes.
Yeah. And yes. But what they found was when they brought them into the park, people kind of lost their minds.
Yeah,
and so there's actually been discussion about, can we bring those characters out of the show and can we have them walk around the park?
Oh, my gosh. I know, and people would lose their minds and the line would be ridiculously long to meet the Sanderson sisters. I can guarantee
you. Yeah, but you know, again, I want to meet Winnie. You know, I want to hang out.
Yes, exactly.
that I guess they've actually looked at Tim Allen's take on the Santa Claus about whether or not they could get away with that version of Santa. And I guess the fear is that you'd have to provide a context that made sense. I mean, the thing of doing the show in front of the castle, the Hocus Pocus show, is that, you know, you do enough of the music, you can use lighting, you can use a script to establish, okay, these are these characters that you know from the movie, and they've come back. And the thing is, how do you do that with Tim Allen's version of Santa from, the Santa Claus movies? So,
That's very interesting to think about. Like, then especially for a movie, I mean, it is a cult movie at this point, but you know, it's definitely not on people's forefronts of, hey, you know, a character we should really have is Tim Allen's Santa Claus. Like, that's not something that I'm thinking that people are hoping for, but okay.
But here's the thing. Bob Chapek, the new honcho in charge of the parks. I mean, have you heard this guy's job title now? He's chairman of Parks, Experiences, and Consumer Products. I mean, literally, you know, it's not just parks and resorts. It's experiences like that void, that Star Trek, or excuse me, that Star Wars thing that's over at Disney Springs and also in Anaheim. And also, you know, the fact that in Bob's mind, consumer products and the parks and these experience things go hand in hand. It's
that's
all
the part
about
that makes me itchy. It just makes me a little uneasy, but that's okay.
Well, no, it just the he is really behind so much of the stuff. It's not a coincidence that, you know, if you look at the number of Frozen based attractions that are now in the works, whether it's, you know, the Tokyo, the whole new land that's being added to Tokyo Disney Springs, where they're basically going to take the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train set up ride vehicle and that sort of thing, and that's then going to be tied up to Wandering Oaken's Magic Sleigh. Plus there's going to be a giant indoor Frozen attraction that's trackless, but Frozen, there's an entire Frozen land that's being built. at the Disneyland Paris Resort is part of their studio complex, but that's bundled with a Marvel Land and their version of Galaxy's Edge. And the Star Wars themed hotel, Bob thinks, is the next big thing for the company. He's desperate to get that up and open by 2020, 2021. He wants it to be something that people can sample as part of Disney World's 50th anniversary. And then he's marching that thing around the world. You're going to see a number of those pop up. But he's all about, stuff going into the parks that puts the characters, particularly the characters in from movies that are made, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars for the company. Those are the ones you'll see in the park, out in the parks around the world.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, I definitely don't see any new ideas, like creative, innovative, new things that aren't IP related coming anytime soon. So, because of news like this. Yeah.
Well, and the irony is that if you look at something like, say, Mystic Manor for Hong Kong, that would be a relatively easy attraction mm-hmm. to, say, grab and drop into Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Absolutely. I think it would fit there 100%. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. But, as far as Bob is concerned, it's like, for example, what just happened with the the Flights of Wonder, the bird based show, that ran in the park forever. It's they pulled that down and brought it back up as an Up themed, a Pixar based attraction. And that's kind of the mantra now. Let me be completely blunt here. With Pete Docter now as the new head of Pixar, when John Lasseter was the gentleman who was, head of Pixar and head of Disney Animation Studios and, the chief creative consultant for the company as far as Imagineering was concerned, it really wasn't a coincidence that you saw a lot of Toy Story and Cars-themed stuff going into the parks because, of course, those are movies that John personally directed. Mm-hmm. And so, all right, let's look at what Pete Docter has personally directed. We have Monsters, Inc. Mm-hmm. We have Inside Out. And we have Up. I would not be terribly surprised over the next, 5 years or so when we see Pixar stuff go into the parks that you'll see a much heavier presence for Monsters, Inc. Some of that will be in the back of the television series for the Disney subscription service we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. But we've already seen, an Up-based attraction go in. When they do the phase two of Pixar Pier in California, you're going to see Flicks Flyers from A Bug's Land. That ride's going to be reconfigured to be in the Inside Out Emotional Whirlwind.
Which is the weirdest name, but whatever.
Well, I'm sorry. I like the earlier name better. The Mood Swings.
Yes.
Exactly. That would have been perfect. Yes.
But Emotional Whirlwind, I can take that as well. But yeah, don't really be surprised. Because again, this is how Imagineering also works. That, when the big wig comes in, it's like, well, what is he like? And in Lasseter's case, it was like, well, he likes the movies he directed. So, hey, we want to do something with Woody. We want to do something with Buzz.
Yes.
And so, now with Pete. But the upside is Pete is a legitimately crazy theme park fan. Tony Baxter was telling me this story about how he once took Pete on an after hours tour of the Magic Kingdom, and he at one point he took him in backstage at the Indiana Jones Adventure and showed him the troop transports. They sort of popped the hood and showed all the mechanisms, and he said he looked over at Doctor, and it was like he had this smile on his face like he was five and it was Christmas morning, like, oh, this is great. And And he did, and he loves the history of the parks. In fact, he and Chris Merritt, Chris Merritt, who's written used to do some wonderful work for the E-Ticket magazine, and also wrote a wonderful history of Knott's Berry Farm. But he's collaborated with Pete on a book about Mark Davis that specifically focuses on Mark's work for the theme parks.
That's awesome.
They've done a couple of presentations on this already, and it's stunning. I mean, they found, you know, I mean, everyone talks about, when they talk about Mark Davis, you know, it's attractions like Western River or, yeah, mm-hmm. things like that Mark proposed that never got built. And they found dozens of things that Mark worked on that have never seen the light of day. And it's this wonderful book coming in 2019. So, you know, keep an eye out for it. But again, you know, Pete is a huge, serious theme park fan. So I'm hopeful that he will help get some really great attractions put in the park. And who knows, maybe we will get some stuff that isn't based on an IP that sold $1 billion. So
But if we get anything, I would like that Monsters, Inc. Roller coaster, the one with the doors. Like, when I saw that in the movie, I was like, that will be an attraction within 18 months. I'm shocked it hasn't been. I know. I'm shocked.
Well, I mean, you know the story about that, right? There is this thing they call the cast member portal. Disney World employee. And again, I'm dating myself. This is technology that they had in the parks in 2008. So, you know, the idea is, if you didn't have a laptop at home and you needed to, say, update, you know, your employee record or book a class or that sort of thing, you could sit down and, backstage and get on the Disney portal and make these changes to your file or book a class or whatever. But as it was in sort of, you know, entertainment mode before somebody sat down and started using it to input info, it would run film clips or short presentations or that sort of thing. And there was one night starting at midnight that it ran the presentation reel about coming to Disney Hollywood Studios is the Monsters, Inc. door coaster. And it ran through the entire presentation. And what ended up happening is that evidently this was something that was supposed to be announced in, I want to say, October of 2008. But somebody had accidentally keyed the file wrong. So, or maybe it was supposed to go up in November and they keyed the file, so it went up rather than November 1st, October 1st. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but again, here's the thing. It only ran from midnight to, I want to say, like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, because it took till somebody got into work in California, the 3-hour time difference. Oh, in the morning and realize, oh crap, that file that's not supposed to be up for a month is up. And they pulled it down off the portal. I mean, I had dozens of people reach out who were like, I just saw this art. And it's like, and again, sadly, this was in the day when, you know, 2008, not a whole lot of people had, you know, phones or cameras in their phones or for that matter, because they were backstage at Disney. You weren't allowed to have a camera. So, you know, they described to me all of the artwork for, you know, that was shown, and, you know, it sounded like this absolutely wonderful ride, but the sad part is, between October of 2011 and November of 2011, of course, or excuse me, October of 2008, November of 2008 was, that infamous financial correction. And, you know, there were so many projects that Disney had in the works at that time that just totally got shut down. I mean, you know, do you remember Hyperion Wharf?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I mean, we actually got art. We actually got press releases. You know, I mean, that was a Go project that got shut down. And then, of course, we ended up
with the better for it, though, to be perfectly honest. I think Disney Springs is probably a better option overall. So.
Well, now that, you know, we'll face it, we won't know the full build out until, of course, they finish with what they're doing with the West Side. In fact, my understanding is we're about 2 months, 3 months out from the announcement of the Disney-centric Cirque du Soleil show that's going to replace La Nuba. We'll get the official announcement. And then, again, we won't see performances until 2019 or thereabouts. But yeah, between the NBA thing and, in fact, I think Len was just telling me that Bongos is about to go under the knife as well.
I'm surprised it's still there. I'm honestly surprised that place is still there.
Well, you know, again, it's all about, you know, first they had to make sure that the, you know, the newer stuff in Disney Springs was actually working. And now it's all about, you know, it's like, okay, that works, so we can pivot and pay attention to, you know, what we're going to do to fix the west side. But we also have that additional parking structure that we're putting in. I mean, you know, how you guys go, do you have a particular favorite new component of Disney Springs? Or
I think Mike and Pam have one.
Well, I mean, besides homecoming, because I like to eat. But I will say, you know, we went in World of Disney last week, and my wife was kind of, and she's a big shopper. I just go to Disney Springs because she likes to shop, and that's part of going to Walt Disney World. You know, I have to go with her. She goes with me to the theme parks. But we went in World of Disney, and she was kind of sad to see the old style store go away. Which to me, looking back, the new look matches the Disney Springs aesthetic a lot better with the brick and the more open areas. I like the way it looks. And the old look is kind of like 90s, but it was functional. Like you had rooms for jewelry, rooms for, you know, little girls' dresses and so forth. And it was very user friendly. But I think that aesthetically, and I think that's what Disney Springs is going for, is that aesthetic and the, you know, the that in. Industrial, I don't know if it's industrial, but the brick look. And I like
well,
it.
Well, yeah, that you know, that kind of conceit of the, you know, what had previously been an industrial or an urban setting changed over to retail. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but at the same time, if you've been to, you know, one of the recently retooled Disney stores where, you know, you no longer have the giant pink castle in the middle. I mean, that just reflects where the Disney company is now. I mean, when you're a Disney that sells Marvel and Lucasfilm and Muppets and, you know, the Pixar films and the Walt Disney animated stuff, let alone what Disney Junior is doing, you know, you have to have a much more flexible, retail space. So, you know, that's. You know, I know it gives a lot of people who miss the, you know, the building that, you know, or at least the artwork that was up along the ceiling that was there from 96. But yeah, that
I had to finally say I had to say goodbye to the 90s. That was the last holdout of the 1990s. I graduated high school way back in the early 90s. So that was it. When that store got remodeled, that's it. It's gone. No more 90s. It's so sad.
Well, you know.
What can you do?
But yeah, you know,
hey, fanny packs are back. So
they are.
Oh well, okay. You know, I thought they had those all in the warehouse where they kept the Ark of the Covenant. But okay,
yeah, they came back around. I mean, Disney probably could sell the old, like the trashed ones that they had from the 80s and 90s, and be like, ta-da, new. We have fanny packs here.
It's so funny you say that. We have here at the house, I think Nancy uses it as a sort of a catch-all thing, but it was one of the, you know, it was right after Disney had announced, I want to say it was 95, the Wild Animal Kingdom, the different sort of Disney theme park. And you can actually go into the store at the exit of the Walt Disney Story. And they had the Wild Disney's Animal Kingdom or Disney's Wild Kingdom but yeah, it had the original name that they then mutated in, you know, a year or two out ahead of the opening of the park.
Yeah, that stuff's so interesting. That's why I love listening to your stories. I got to tell you that because I listen to you and Len. I run in the mornings, and when your shows come out, it's fun because you guys go all over the place. And I love that because I feel like, wow, I didn't know that. Like, I've walked past that thing 16 times, and I had no idea there was a story to that, you know, that lamppost or, you know, that area of the park. And It keeps things interesting. And I love kind of, I feel like when I listen to you guys, I'm kind of in the know, you know, I love that stuff. So Jim, you're on with us every summer and we appreciate you helping us raise money for Give Kids the World. I know you're going to be out in Indiana, right? For the Indy Disney meet next month, correct?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I was just chatting with those folks about what they want to do. We just lost Henry Landreth, the gentleman who set up the Give Kids the World Village. And I pitched them, this will be my second year of pitching this, but I really want to do the Give Kids the World Village story, because it is absolutely fascinating. I mean, Henry was one of these people who, I mean, do you know his story at all? I mean, he was literally a kid in a concentration camp who at one point got marched into the woods to be shot. And, you know, the soldiers kind of, you know, basically didn't necessarily take pity on him, but it's like it would be too much trouble to actually shoot the kid, you know, or they didn't want to waste the bullets. I'm not sure, but they let him go. And he was a great believer in, you know, that from that moment forward about giving back and, you know, particularly when it came to children. And when it came to actually building the village, the way he would either charm or strong arm or persuade or threaten, you know, to get the necessary building materials for that place, were just, it's this wonderful, colorful story. And he was such a character. You know, in fact, you know, that he made a lot of his money in life because back when Cape Canaveral was just getting started in the space race, he was the one who persuaded Holiday Inn to build down there. And he became very, very, very close to the original Mercury 7 astronauts. You know, they considered him good, close friends. In fact, a lot of the fundraising for the Give the Kid the World's Village, at least for the first 10 or 15 years, was on the back of, hey, would you like to meet Neil Armstrong or, you know, John Glenn or, you know, that sort of thing. And but he was kind of a vicious teaser at some point. I remember there's this great story where he basically held a dinner for the Mercury 7 astronauts and brought them in with their wives. And it's like, all right, everyone enjoy your chicken cutlet. And what he'd had the chef do was bread and fry pieces of cardboard and, you know, and serve them to the astronauts and their wives. And, you know, and I think, it, you know, he did the same thing with, like, the baked potatoes were actually rolled up socks, you know. And these poor people, it's like, well, they're at a charity dinner. And he's like, you know, we can't say that the food is terrible. And Henry let them try to eat for like 5 minutes before, ah, it's a joke. Let me bring in the real food, you know. But no, it's all those sorts of stories. And I'm hoping that the folks at the Indy Disney meet let me do a presentation about Henry or the village, because it's got such an amazing history.
Well, we're going to be there as well, and I can't wait to get to see you again and listen to your story. So, Jim, thank you again for coming on. We appreciate it every summer. Where can people catch up? Because I know you're doing a ton of podcasts. You're doing Star Wars ones. Yeah. You're with Len. So where can people catch up with everything you're doing?
Well, we're actually in the process of taking the podcast, and it's Nancy, the brains of the outfit, then Nancy Stadler and Aaron Adams. They're in the process of setting up the, God help me, it's called the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, and we've got five shows on it so far. We've got the Disney Dish thing I do with Len. We've got the show I do with Aaron Adams, the Marvel Us Disney, which is about, you know, the Marvel Studios stuff. We also have Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, which is about Walt Disney Animation Studios and what's going on at Pixar. And we have Universal Joint, which I do with Dennis Hughes, which is about, you know, what's going on the Universal side of things. And to bring us back to where we started the show today, that I'm actually in the process of trying to get a new Muppets thing up out of the ground. Because, you know, that seriously, they are not kidding around. The Muppets at Disney are coming back in a big way. I don't know if you've seen the Muppet Baby show that's run on Disney.
Yes. They have Little Muppet Babies at the Disney store right now, and I want to buy them. Like, I'm not kidding.
Well, that's
no children, but I watched the Muppet Babies as a kid, and I want to buy them.
Well, the new CG show that they do with the character, I mean, the CG animation is so good, so scary. It looks like it's the actual Muppets. It's not, you know, 2D hand-drawn animation. I mean, and writing's wonderful, but again, you've got, it's kind of a 1-2 punch of, you've got this going, plus the thing that they're doing at the O2, plus the tour of the United States that's coming and the series that's on the back of that. I mean, you're going to see the Muppets at Disney back in a big, big way. So, I want to get started talking about them as well.
That's awesome.
But,
awesome. Yeah, I don't know how you find time to do all these shows, Jim. That's crazy. You're never going to have a voice.
You know, it helps to have no life. Again, and more to the point, to have forced all of the really valuable, useful stuff out of your brain. I have no algebra left. I have no science or fact or history. It's all cardboard boxes filled with Disney crap.
Hey, and we love you for it, buddy. We love you for it. So, Jim, thanks so much. We gotta catch up with your buddy Len Testa here at the top of the hour. So thanks for coming on the show, buddy. We'll see you in Indy.
All right, take care. We'll see you there.
All take care. See
Jim.
Thanks
so much.
Bye. Bye, Jim. Thank you.
I think if we let Jim tell stories, he'd tell stories till 9 o'clock Eastern.
He would.
He's a lot to tell, for sure.
Yes, he does. It's crazy. It's awesome. I love it. And I hope he does tell this story about Henry, because he engages
awesome.
You.
When it would be. It's a great story. And we had mentioned the book before, but the book does tell his story, and it's a great story. It just really is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have great news.
We do.
So, okay, let's get to that.
We did meet the challenge.
Yeah! Today,
which is so awesome. Jim's $30 story put us over the top.
That's what it was.
Thanks
so much, Mr. Hill, for that. I think we got the $30 story and some.
Yeah, I think we did. I think awesome. We did. So currently we are sitting at $15,724 since 9 o'clock this morning.
Wow. Very That's good. Awesome.
And thanks so again fantastic. To Ski Jumper Dad for the incredible matching donation the last hour for that challenge.
For yes. sure. That was great.
It.
All right. So what we are going to do, we're going to read everybody's names here shortly that have donated so we can get everybody in. We're getting the evening crew starting to arrive. Well, actually, it's the afternoon crew, but hopefully you'll hang out with us during the evening. But we're going to do a reset here one more time because we're coming up on another 4-hour section. Can you believe that? We've been on almost 8 hours already.
That's crazy.
Is that right? Yeah.
Four hours to go.
Yeah, because we only literally, Mixler gives us 12 hours a day, period. And there's a clock that starts counting backwards as soon as you hit record or live. And right now we have 4 hours, 10 minutes, and 12 seconds left. So we got to make sure that we're off by exactly 12 hours or else they'll just cut us off. So.
See.
Just so you know, we're going to have to start wrapping it at like, I was going to say 10:30. Remember when we used to go to 11?
No, we can't do that anymore. We're too old for that.
Yes, we are. So we're going to have to start wrapping it like 8:30. Remind
me. Yeah, we do have to start wrapping at 8:30 so we can. I will confirm this.
Because I know you guys are going to go out and have fun in Pittsburgh while I'm here in St. Louis.
A little of this, I'm just saying.
If we make our goal, there's going to be a little of this.
There's going to be some celebrating, I have a feeling. So again, you can donate right now, BeOurGuestPodcast.com. Click on the link. Thank you so much. All this money is going to Give Kids the World. We are going to make a reset. If you're on Mixler, don't go anywhere because it's going to stay live the entire time. I'm going to save this section of the show and reset the Be Live on Facebook. So please come on back on Facebook. We need you here because Len Testa coming up at the top of the hour in 6 minutes. All right, do a reset right now. We'll
Gotta
be right.
Len Testa stories.
Yes, I mean, this is like Jim and Len back to back. Man, I need some caffeine. All right, so we'll be right back in just a moment.
You've been listening to the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the show, please visit our website at BeOurGuestPodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.